Welcome to Human Rights Education Now, a podcast series from Human Rights Educators USA. I'm your host, Bill Fernekes, a member of the National Steering Committee of HRE USA, a collaborative network that learns, teaches, organizes, advocates, and innovates for human rights education in the United States. This podcast aims to raise awareness about human rights education and invites listeners to engage with the worldwide movement to make human rights education a core focus of educational programs from preschool through higher education and in both non-formal and informal community educational settings. Today's program is a conversation with Marissa Gutierrez Vicario, Director of Arte Justice and co-chair of the HRE USA National Steering Committee. Marissa discusses the development of her interest in human rights and its connections to social and racial justice, how the creative arts have served as a platform for introducing young people to human rights education, and how her work in interfaith projects has contributed to her human rights advocacy. Well, it's a great pleasure to be talking with Marissa Gutierrez Vicario. How are you today, Marissa?
Great. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for having me.
So, Marissa, what initially inspired you to take an interest in human rights?
No, that's great, and I love that you started with that the question. So, again, my name is Marissa. You, she, her pronouns. So, I'm originally from Southern California. That's where I started. So I grew up as a Mexican-American. I currently work and live in New York City. So just for context. And I would say, like, growing up, even at a very young age, I was very interested in service and leadership and from even as a elementary school student. I do think it was around the age of when I was in high school. And I can talk about this more later. Like, I started working a lot with faith-based communities, Unitarian Universalists. So that was something that moved me from service to activism, and both are important. But I really was interested in thinking about the root cause and addressing the root causes of certain issues. And then in college, at the university, that is when the language of human rights, through student clubs, I took an international law class. That's when I really, really started getting interested in human rights and putting names to issues. And again, finding the language around service and around also thinking about which communities I wanted to work with. So at that point, I think, like, thinking about women's rights, thinking about migrant rights, and especially mass incarceration, because I grew up around mass incarceration from where I'm from. So that at around that time, I think human rights, that became something I was really interested in.
Can you talk a little bit about your Mexican heritage and how you feel that has shaped your worldview?
Yes. So I think when, what I will say about being Mexican American, and I also want to acknowledge that, like, and that's something I think that has been coming up in the movement, like, I do feel connected, of course, to migrant and immigration issues, but I also want to acknowledge that, like, that, that doesn't mean, if one's background may not necessarily mean that, but it also is a part of that. And I also say that too because I think so it has been a part of me in growing up and, like, my grandparents and things like that. But also I would hope that it would just be of interest to me no matter what. But I do think being Mexican, being Chicana, like, again, wanting to understand migration issues and wanting to understand, discrimination that comes from having, being of a certain background. So I think that was naturally gravitating towards that. And that's why it helped shape me in who I am and wanting to ensure that, like, especially other young people don't face that, the similar challenges and also can, I grew up, like, especially around immigrant rights issues. And then also, like I mentioned, mass incarceration. And I grew up near, you know, a prison. So for me, those also shaped who I am and like why it was important for me to address those issues. I think as a young person, I was very angry just because I didn't feel at the time I had a necessarily community that I could organize with. So as I got older, that's partially why I started the work I did around Arte, which I can talk about in a second. Just as a young person of color, not feeling like I had a community yet and wanting to build that community so to address human rights violations.
So did you look up on someone like Dolores Huerta as a role model or someone who would be a guidepost?
Yeah, I mean, definitely Dolores Huerta, like, you know, but also, you know, most definitely, especially from Southern California. And so that's something like Cesar Chavez, like, you know, these are leaders who especially were and locally, you know, human rights leaders. But also, you know, looking at leaders also like Black leaders, you know, looking at Malcolm X as a leader, you know, looking at like Ella Baker, you know, all these other different activists of color. But definitely because being Mexican, being from Southern California, like, you know, these were important people to look towards. Actually, like had the honor of Dolores Huerta was a professor that I had at one point. So it was something very, it was super inspiring, but also like really impactful.
So in your education at high school, university, you mentioned you started to learn the vocabulary and sort of the conceptual framework. How did you relate that to the idea of using that to be an organizer?
Like I'd mentioned, I think being able, like, or actually I didn't mention this yet, but I do feel like once you're able to name something, you know, you're able to address it, you're able to do something about it. Once someone feels like they have human rights, they feel like they can defend their rights and the rights of others. So I think that was really, really critical for organizing in the sense that, like I said, you know, thinking about root causes. So, you know, I think oftentimes, at least growing up at the time I did at the university, you know, I did see a deep desire for students to, like, you know, want to do food drives or, you know, want to, like, you know, raise money for the homeless population, which is great. And I think it's really important. And also, I think with the human rights vocabulary, it makes us think, okay, so what are the root causes of homelessness? I worked in LA, lived in LA at that time. You know, there was homelessness around us and folks in the community who, you know, didn't have places to live as universities also, you know, help gentrify areas, you know, all as with human rights and that language, you know, we're able to address that and think about, like, you know, why are we taking action and what are some ways that we can make our actions more sustainable?
In the United States, there's been a reluctance to actually embrace human rights concepts in popular discourse. Most of the civil rights discourse has taken place in this country. Did you encounter that same reluctance when you started doing work in Arte?
I think if I'm remembering correctly, I don't feel that there was much pushback on human rights for Arte. I do feel that there was pushback on even and there still is actually, which is really funny. Like the use of resistance, I think in our title, our logo has a fist also and like a paintbrush. I think mm-hmm. even that and using that kind of, which I actually think is very, it's very heavily used iconography. Like it's nothing new. Mm-hmm. But I did find it interesting. People like getting pushback from people on that, which I thought was interesting. So not necessarily human rights. And I think that, so almost in some ways, like human rights felt a little bit more comfortable for folks in some ways, mm-hmm. but also I do agree with you. There is a heavy pushback in terms of like human rights and in education in general, but resistance, I think, was a little bit even more difficult for people to wrap their heads around.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, labor unions have long used resistance as a sort of a key vocabulary.
Absolutely. And also, you know, labor unions, you know, have had a complicated history in the United mm-hmm. States and people pushing back on them as well. I did a little bit of labor work and documentation of unions in Mexico, actually when I was in high school. That also that actually, I didn't even mention that, helped really shape who I was as a young person. Just to be able to see labor rights organizers, union organizers, have resistance towards what was impacting them and the violations that they're experiencing. But for me, that was a moment where I got to think about human rights from an international perspective. Mm. And also think about like, what does human rights look like in practice, you know, for specific, like right to housing, right to healthcare, right to like livable wage. Those were that for me was also like a formative experience for me too.
Yeah. And I think if you think of the border between the US and Mexico as almost an artificial concept, if you took it away, the commonality of the desire for human rights is still there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's turn now to your creation of Arte. And can you give us some background about how the idea came to you and why you feel the creative arts are so significant in moving it forward?
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, so Arte stands for Art and Resistance Through Education, just to give that background. Initially, I moved to New York in 2007 for grad school. So I went to grad school. And I bring that up because that was when I do think actually Arte started way before that in my mind and the interactions I've had. But, you know, really delving into that was around then. And, you know, what we do is like we work with young people, especially ages, I would say 15 to 21, and looking at, you know, how do we talk about human rights, like have them engage around, organize around human rights through the visual arts. So that's the core of what we do. Originally, we started, we actually worked on a first project with the Advocacy Lab, which Sandra Sirota, that was Sandra Sirota's organization, also part of HR USA. So we did a collaborative piece on that. And, you know, since then, we've like changed a lot of ways. Originally, we were really interested, which, you know, I still am personally interested in like street art and graffiti. And then we moved a little bit more. We opened it up more to like, you know, public murals and muralism. And then we moved it up even more in terms of like, you know, not all of our Arte projects are murals now. You know, now they're also like, especially as we work in places, you know, we work in schools, we work in community centers, and, you know, we also have worked in jails, and not every project ends up in a mural, but every project is a visual arts project. Every project is involving human rights in some aspect. So that's kind of where we started. And as, you know, as we move forward, we're also very interested in thinking about, you know, how do we use art as a way to imagine, you know, new ways of thinking and, you know, new ways of, you know, looking at human rights, especially around the carceral system, around immigration. So that's where we've been and where we're hopefully to go.
So what is it about the process of creating a work of art that you feel sort of kindles the flame of inspiration for human rights concerns?
There's a few different things, right? So I think, especially, again, we work primarily with young people. We also work with multi-generational when necessary and appropriate. But, you know, across every group that we've worked with, there is something very special about being able to create something and being able to engage with art, to look at artists, to feel, I think a lot of people, and especially we also work with folks who may not have an arts background and they may not have a human rights background. So this interesting mixture, I think, allows them to feel like they have voices, but they can express their voice. Right. Mm. They can express what they're feeling. They can uniquely express how they feel about the human rights issues that they learn about and or the human rights issues that they might or like violations they might have experienced. Right. So art is a way of, you know, tapping into that heart and soul of folks and articulating ways that I think we may not even able to write or say, right? It just by this process and action and creation. So with Arte, I think especially, you know, it is obviously tremendously this process of engagement and this process of learning and creation. And like also with art, you know, I was just talking about students with this recently, like you can create and revise and shape challenges your thinking. And then of course there's this aspect of a product, whether it's a mural, whether it's a sculpture, where people, we often ask students to like use as a tool for advocacy, a tool for, like, you know, engaging other people in on a particular issue. So it's all of this, you know, it's this form of creative expression. It's this form of really delving in deep with these human, like the human rights aspects, but also, you know, what does it even mean to be human in general, you know, through the process of creation.
So it's an emotional as well as a cognitive connection. Is that fair to say?
I absolutely. Yeah.
If you think about it, then what would be, for example, the starting point with the project? You could sort of walk us through one of the projects, how you start, move it forward, your role as an advisor, and how does it get to the end?
Well, then, and every group is obviously different, you know, and we do have like a model, and also we recognize that it's not a cookie cutter by any means. But I do think that there's this aspect of people feeling like understanding one's community and their identity, right, within a particular context. So, you know, in the past, we've gone and worked with different community members, you know, invited, right? Like, we don't just go in out of nowhere. And then asking people, you know, like a mapping, right? You know, in terms of what's in your community, what is a community, right? We throw that word a lot, but, like, you know, what does that mean? Why is it important? You know, what human rights violations exist? What human rights exist, right? Also, there's also assets in terms of a community. You know, and we also ask people to think about what issues they care about the most. That's something we've learned, at least I've learned over the process, like, you know, you can never force someone to think, like, you can introduce information, material and the UDHR, but, you know, you can't force someone to think like what rights they want to focus on, you know what I mean? So, you know, so there's this aspect, of course, we're talking about, you know, all 30 rights and how they are interconnected and they're so important, but also there are naturally rights that people gravitate towards a little bit more. You know, so recently I think we're seeing with students, you know, they're interested in like gentrification and housing, especially in New York City. This is a big issue that's, you know, has always been there, but, you know, I think, again, people are using the language to talk about it more. So we'll work with students, we'll do research around it, we'll introduce them to them artists or artivists, so artivist activists, and then from there, you know, we'll introduce some kind of art activity, and art is infused throughout everything, right? Whether it is in the way that people brainstorm their creation, whether it is how they look at art, right, and then also the production of some kind of piece of art. And I think in everything we do, there is an element of presentation. So sometimes it's a mural unveiling, which is larger, and sometimes it's just presenting to your fellow classmate, right? Like, and that is also presentation, and like how we talk about our art is really important as well. So that's generally, I think, how it goes. And, you know, and of course, you know, we have longer term workshops, we have smaller workshops, but there's this aspect of all of this within it.
So give us an example of a project you're engaged in right now.
So, right, one thing that we started and it took off since the beginning of the pandemic was this project called Youth Voices Lead, which I really love. And, you know, during the beginning of the pandemic, we really thought, like, we've always wanted to have students a little bit thinking more about organizing in a different way and training. So during the pandemic, or beginning the pandemic, we created this program called Youth Voices Lead. So it's young people who come into this program. It's specifically focused on racial justice and looking at different issues and human rights around racial justice. We'll work like now it's a hybrid program, but we'll work with students. We'll talk about different issues. They'll have guest speakers. They'll, again, produce some kind of final product. But throughout the whole space, you know, they're learning organizing tools. They're learning about different artists, and then by the end, you know, they're leading a training for their community members. Right now we're doing this as well. I think this has been our fifth program, if I'm not mistaken. And we are in collaboration with the Initiative for a Just Society at Columbia. We're working a little bit with them around abolition and abolition democracy. So that is also something that they're creating artwork, and they're also creating, which I'm hoping will be like a public sticker campaign and things like that. So, you know, they're learning, they're looking at human rights and they're looking at this concept of abolition. And, you know, our goal, obviously we want students to learn more about what abolition is and, like, you know, as it relates to different human rights issues and especially about mass incarceration and policing. But I think I also acknowledge, like, not every student, like, we want students to learn, right, and grow, and like, you know, at their own space and pace. And so that's also been interesting, you know, to see, like, a lot of students are like, you have questions. And so we're trying to use art as a space for them to think about questions, think about, feel comfortable to ask whatever they want, and also acknowledge that we're learning about this all together.
So it sounds very much like you're using a Frarian approach.
Yes. Yeah.
You're engaging the community to try to have them come to self-awareness.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what are some of the obstacles, though, that you've faced in trying to empower the people you work with?
From with them directly or like outside?
Either is fine.
With students, you know, they're great and we love working with them. And also, I think we're always trying to figure out ways to continue to make them feel safe in these spaces, mm-hmm. right? We also acknowledge, there's a few different things. You know, we acknowledge that students can be very busy. You know, they also, you know, if they're young, you know, like they're also, they have obligations, you know, they have quite a lot on their plate. So learning how to support them in that. I think there's also a group of young people that we want to continue, like we also have an internship program. We want to continue working with students also who may not have access to internships or programs or even know where to apply, right? So that, and we work with students all like from all over. But, you know, if you want to reach students who don't know how to apply for internships, if you want to reach students who have never been in a after school program, like that takes time and energy and intention. So that's actually quite difficult. And also on the other side, you know, thinking about, you know, other challenges, like that also takes funding and time and that's always obviously like all like many organizations, like funding is hard. I think with Arte, I'm blessed in the sense that people, I think that we're bigger than we actually are because we do a lot, but also we're actually quite small and we actually need a lot of funding. So that's always been a challenge. I think the other challenge is because we're an arts and human rights organization, we're always at this interesting intersection. And now we're seeing this change. You know, there's really, you know, now there's, you know, and there's actually in Vienna, there, you know, there's a master's human rights program at the University of Applied Arts. Bard has a program. Like we're seeing this beautiful intersection, but you know, there's still times where as an organization, we're like, you know, are we a human rights organization? You know, are we an arts organization? Who should give us funding? Are we arts enough? Are we human rights enough? So if people don't understand what we're trying to do 100%, or if we're not doing a good job at explaining that, it becomes, that's a huge challenge for us, I think, in terms of, we're always trying to figure out the best way to tell our story. So that's always something that kind of comes up.
And you're in a competitive market to get money.
Yeah.
So you're about to embark on a doctoral program. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. I'm excited. I am going to join Teachers College and the art and art education program they have there. And yeah, it's going to be a 5+ year journey. So, yeah.
What do you see as the way in which that's going to intersect with your human rights work?
Yes, I think about this a lot. And I think about this, like there's obviously a lot I want to share and bring and study. And also there's a lot I have to learn, right? So I think, you know, I'm hoping to continue this work, you know, continue at this intersection of art and human rights, you know, thinking about, I'm very interested in, and I know not everyone would agree with this, but I am interested, you know, how do we look at impact, think about what people are gaining in terms of human rights tools and education through art and using art as this way of determining that. And again, of course, you know, art can also just be for art's sake. This doesn't have to instrumentalize, you know, this work, but this is something that's really interesting to me. Like, you know, how do we know that students are gaining, you know, and learning? And we see aspects of this, of course, otherwise we wouldn't do this work. But if there's ways that I could make it easier for us as an organization, if this, you know, and I say this with humility, if there's even a small piece that helps other people understand this and why this work is important and how it is able to do that, then that's really important to me. So yeah, these are all of things I'm hoping to learn, but also, like, you know, I've done a lot of practice over the last few years, and I have had beautiful moments where I've been able to write about it and things like that or present about it. But I am looking forward to, again, you know, referring to theory and looking at other practices. And then also, like what I was mentioning to some other folks, like, you know, there's also discipline to being like in a research program, and to have being able to have a more disciplined approach to writing about it is also something I'm looking forward to.
Well, you're following in some important footsteps of great artists who've been connected to social justice, like Picasso and Kathy Kollwitz and others.
Yeah. Also, you know, arts educators, Maxine Green, who comes out of, so I, totally. And also, you know, I'm excited to see, to continue teaching. So I work at City College. I love working with students and looking at art and human rights. So that's something I also want to continue doing and will continue doing during my time, but also learning to be a better, you know, educator for folks. And like, I learn with students every time, every semester, even the most challenging ones. So thinking about ways that I can expand upon the practice is really exciting.
Thanks for listening to Human Rights Education Now. Our next program concludes our conversation with Marissa Gutierrez Vicario. You can find additional information about this podcast series at www.hreusa.org. Each episode is available on the HRE USA podcast page, Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts, and Deezer. They will soon be available on YouTube and SoundCloud. You can also download each episode as an MP3 file. If you have questions or comments about this podcast, send them to Christy@HREUSA.org. That's KRISTI@HREUSA.org. Our podcast team includes producer and editor Bill Fernikes, executive producer Christy Redelius Palmer, editor Elizabeth Schwab, sound designer and project manager Sabrina Sanchez, and production coordinator Jasmine Chizu Gota. Human Rights Education Now is a production of Human Rights Educators USA, a project of the Center for Transformative Action in Ithaca, New York.